You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation, and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island, to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4pm on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855am on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio descriptions of Torres Strait Islander people and Aboriginal people who have died. 3CR is also broadcasting on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. First up on the show, we'll hear from David Glance from the Refugee Action Collective. He's one of our regular guests and we will talk about the rise of the far right based on a media release put out by the Refugee Action Coalition in Sydney, entitled No Nazis, Anti-Racist Groups Oppose UK Nazi to Speak at Sydney Rally alongside Jacinta Price. Then we will interview Lydia Thorpe, Senator Lydia Thorpe, and we'll have a yarn with her about treaty and also talk about the disturbing rise of the far right and the fact that Nazis and white supremacists are organising with the help of governments. So I am delighted to welcome David Glance to the show and we'll cross over to him now. Hello, David. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Marissa. Thank you for having me once again.
Lovely to have you.
Yeah. Are there?
Perfect.
Yes, I'm there. Yeah.
Now, David, you and I were having a chat off air about a media release that that Ian Rintel from the Refugee Action Coalition has organised. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that media release, because I believe there are some very disturbing Australia First rallies happening with a white supremacist speaker. Is that right?
Absolutely. I'm afraid we're up for another round of racist far-right rallies. There's going to be one in Sydney on Saturday, the 29th of November, and there's scheduled to be one here in Melbourne, and I believe one in Brisbane on Sunday, the 30th. Now, the far-right comes up in different forms at different times. This is a group called Put Australia First. They seem to be a little bit different from March for Australia, who have organised a couple of rallies now, but the general flavour is not that different. It's about defending implicitly a white Australia, Australian culture against migrants and against refugees. So we can expect more of the same. However, it is these rallies are a little bit different from, say, the rallies which have been more heavily influenced by the Nazis of the National Socialist Network. The speakers come more from the conspiracy theory organisations, and there are actually people of colour speaking both at the Melbourne and Sydney rallies. So these are not simply cookie-cutter examples of what we've seen previously. With March for Australia, especially the first time around, the Nazis clearly had a very big say in shaping those rallies, the platform for the rallies, the style of the rallies and so on. This one is a little bit different, but certainly one that needs to be opposed. And the media release that came out from RAC in Sydney highlighted the fact that Britain's best-known Nazi, Tommy Robinson, is scheduled to speak by video to both the Sydney and Brisbane rallies. I don't know if they're going to be two separate speeches or if they're going to have him speak once, record it, and play it the next day. That's not our concern. But our concern is that the man who is basically at the head of a rising far-right movement in Britain, a very, at times, violent far-right movement in Britain, is being given an opportunity to speak to Australian audiences. And for a while at least, it looked like in Sydney that Jacinta Namba-Jimba-Price, who is now in the Liberal Party, used to be in the Nationals, now in the Liberal Party, would be speaking effectively alongside, morally, if not physically, alongside Tommy Robinson. Her name has now been pulled from the Put Australia First website. I think that means that that implies that either the Liberal Party has told her to pull her head in, or she's decided not to speak, or I can only speculate. But sure. All I can say is it was only two or three days ago that the organisers of the rallies were boasting that Jacinta Price would be speaking, and she indicated that she would be. But she's now disappeared from the website. And I think we'll take that as a win, because the RAC media release alerted the media. I understand the Sydney Morning Herald is following up on the fact that supposedly mainstream MP is speaking at a far-right rally alongside a very prominent Nazi. And if she's pulled out because of that pressure, that's a good thing, because I think what we want to do is push the racists away from the Nazis, leave the Nazis isolated. They're a big enough problem by themselves. But we do want the racists to think, we'll stay away from these rallies, which is why we mobilise in lots of different ways, including obviously protesting on the day. Here in Melbourne, there will be a protest on Sunday, the 30th of November. It's been called at the State Library at 11:30. I think it's a little early to know exactly what's going to be happening that day, but I would certainly encourage people who are listening to put that date, time and place, Sunday the 30th of November, 11:30 a.m. State Library. Put it in your diaries, because we do need a mass rally of anti-racists.
The reason why I actually invited you onto the show, David, was not just to highlight the rallies, but also for you to perhaps, I was going to ask you to comment on the way that the anti-immigration stance is hurting refugees and asylum seekers. For example, the National Socialist Network helped orchestrate the racist march for Australia rallies against immigration that have drawn thousands.
Yes, it's extremely worrying.
Yeah.
It's fermenting racism, it's fermenting scapegoating. Obviously, people of colour in particular, refugees and migrants, feel some fear. But this didn't start with the National Socialist Network.
No.
This started with supposedly respectable politicians trading accusations about who was tougher or weaker on cracking down on migration. You know, you think back to
exactly
the beginning of this year, the running up to the federal election, Labor and Liberal were competing to pose as who would be toughest on migration. What they mean is stopping migrants coming in. And when they say that, what it means is migrants are a problem. They give that idea, they push that idea out into the world. Sections of the media give it a very big push along. And then people pick it up and assume that's common sense and that it's right. And so I think responsibility has to start with the people at the top. Sometimes people say to me, these racism rallies, they're just uneducated. And I go, well, whether they're educated or not, actually it's the highly educated MPs, newspaper editors, that shock jocks. They're the ones who are pushing the poison out into society. And then the people like the National Socialist Network and March for Australia swagger in and say, don't settle for second best. Go with the real races. Go with us. And we saw just a couple of days ago now in Sydney, the outcome of that is the largest Nazi rally that I'm aware of in Sydney in recent times. 60 Nazis dressed in black, confident enough to show their faces, lined up outside the New South Wales Parliament with a banner saying, "Ban the Jewish Lobby."
Wow, that's just...
It makes my blood
That's
boil.
Horrific, isn't it, David?
It is.
Absolutely it is. Horrific.
For 2 years, we've been told that Palestine rallies are anti-Semitic. It's absolute
Correct.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
Absolute rubbish. There is no evidence. I've been involved in Palestine solidarity work for a long time. I cannot think of any significant example of anti-Semitism in the Palestine movement, especially not over the last 2 years. But the New South Wales police facilitated a group of Nazis with an openly anti-Semitic banner to stand outside Parliament without harassment. A couple of days before that, peace protesters were tear gassed and pepper sprayed outside a weapons expo in Sydney. So to protest against weapons of war means you get attacked by the police. To stand up and call out anti-Semitic slogans, you get protected by the police. It is absolutely disgusting and shows that we can't rely on the police in the fight against racism.
Absolutely. And in fact, David, one of the things you were making a comment before, which I'd really like to expand on, you were mentioning that the governments have whipped up all this hysteria. Can you comment on that? Because that's really crucial,
well,
isn't it?
It is. I think the fallback, I mean, I remember it comes in waves. Every time there's popular anger or unrest or disquiet over housing or traffic on the roads or waiting times for health, the immediate response by sections of our politicians is to say, "Oh, there's too many migrants and I'll do something about it." Not, "There aren't enough hospitals and I'll build more." Not, "We need more public transport so people can get to work." They never argue that, or they rarely argue that, but they will, as a knee-jerk reaction, they will go for the, "There's too many people, and that's why you have, you know, you, the ordinary person, have these problems." And then, as I say, if a respectable politician says there's too many migrants, it makes it so easy for people on the far right to pick up that argument and to run with it and to turn it into a much nastier, sometimes violent form of racism. We've got a very clear example at the moment around the question of deportations. We now have the first handful of deportations from Australia to Nauru. Nauru is a tiny island in the South Pacific. It has a population, I think, of about 11 or 12,000. It's smaller than the size of Tullamarine Airport. I don't mean just the runways, but the whole area of the airport. It's a tiny spot in the middle of the South Pacific, and the Labor government is paying them, the Nauruan government, $2.5 billion over the next 30 years to take about 350 people that they want to deport. And ABC TV last night revealed a lot of the corruption that's tied up with that. There's corruption in multiple levels. There's effectively the bribing of the government of Nauru, and the Australian government knows it's doing that. There is enormous waste of money on paying companies to run a detention centre on Nauru. So there's a lot of corruption. People are making millions out of this, and a tiny number of people who could be in Australia are being deported to Nauru. Now, how do you think that makes the National Socialist Network feel? They have a banner, I've seen it, in Melbourne, "Mass deportations now." Well, the Labor government is actually doing deportations. So when the Nazis say, "We need deportations," Labor can't say, "Oh, no, no, that's terrible. We don't want that," because they themselves are deporting people. They are snatching people at 4 o'clock in the morning, just like Trump's ICE, snatching people in the early hours of the morning, putting them on a plane and flying them to basically a rock in the middle of the South Pacific at enormous expense to the Australian taxpayer, enormous moral expense. And this is happening right now in our name. And the Refugee Action Collective has been organising against this for quite some time, as have others in the refugee movement, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre and others. And I'll just, while we're talking about it, I'll give a plug. The Refugee Action Collective sure. has a public forum next Monday, so a week today, Monday the 17th, if I've got my dates right. It's at 6:30 p.m. at the Kathleen Syme Library in Faraday Street, Carlton. And we'll be talking about what Nauru is really like. We will be hearing from a nurse who worked on Nauru and is disgusted by what she saw. We're going to be hearing from a campaign organiser from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre and another speaker from us, from the Refugee Action Collective. Because people need to know that Nauru is being used in a disgusting way. Nauru needs Australian government support, but not bribes and not detention centres and not deportations. This is not the way to help our neighbours in the Pacific.
Exactly, and I was just thinking when you were speaking, David, that basically why have these rallies been allowed to go ahead?
The Nazi rallies?
Yeah.
Well, in Sydney this week, or last couple of days, that they've claimed it was a communications breakdown. Now, there's been a flurry of laws passed by the Minns Labor government in New South Wales, all of them essentially trying to make it more difficult to protest for Palestine. Well, one of those laws is reinforcing the fact that it's now a criminal offence to promote racial hatred in public. So why don't the police know that a banner that says ban the Jewish lobby, forget about how these guys are dressed, and they're all guys, by the way, they're all men, forget about they're all black uniforms, their banner is clearly, unambiguously anti-Semitic. And so you have to say that the police are really not interested in stopping racist activity on the streets.
Correct.
They're very keen to make life hard for Palestine supporters. But now, of course, the Labor government is squirming with embarrassment. Oh, this shouldn't have happened. We need new laws. And that's their response every time, is to turn the screw on the right to protest and the right to dissent and the right to speak out in the name of fighting the far right, but in practice it's normally the left and those standing up for Palestine rights or indigenous rights who actually feel the brunt of the law.
I'm actually really glad that you were able to speak about how the governments are really orchestrating this, you know, in regards to their own anti-immigration rhetoric. But also, David, going back to the speaker, Robinson, he's a member of the Nazi British National Party, and he co-founded the Violent Racist English Defence League in 2009.
So,
yeah, apparently. So looking at this media release that was created by the Refugee Action Coalition, and it's crazy, like, why are they allowing a speaker like this to on the platform?
Well, the workaround, of course, is he won't be here physically. So
no, it'll be online, but still.
He'll be online. I think if they will allow 60 Nazis with an anti-Semitic banner to stand in front of the New South Wales Parliament, they're not going to stop a guy from England speaking. And the story gets murkier, Marissa, because Tommy Robinson is Britain's best-known leading Nazi, so he's speaking here, but he's also been invited as a guest by Israel to go and visit.
I know.
You think I've gone crazy, you know,
when
I'm saying this. Tommy Robinson has been invited to go to Israel despite the fact he is on the far right, despite the fact he hangs out with and encourages anti-Semites because he's Islamophobic. And the Israeli government is welcoming him as a leading fighter against quote-unquote Islamic terror, which really means fomenting racism against all Muslims, regardless of which variety of Islam they follow, regardless of how peaceful they are. So we have a bizarre situation where Israel is inviting a Nazi to come and speak about how to be more racist against Muslims. And that puts, I suspect, the Labour government here, state and federal, in a bit of a bind, because they are supporting Israel. Israel has supported Tommy Robinson. So that makes it difficult for them to say that he shouldn't speak. The fact he'll be on a screen, I think, is the way they get round these issues. But I do wonder what would have happened if he applied for a visa, because on the face of it, he shouldn't be allowed into this country.
Definitely
but
not.
But he's a so-called friend of Israel. So we are dealing with some very murky politics on the right wing.
Exactly. In particular, because I believe a Sikh temple and a mosque were firebombed as well.
I haven't heard about that as a recent incident, but yes.
2018, indeed, in the
past.
All right,
yes, those kinds of incidents happen in Britain. The kind of people who love Tommy Robinson will go out and firebomb buildings, but of course it's happened here from time to time. But really doesn't attract much attention. An attack on
exactly.
a synagogue, and we're told, and of course I oppose all forms of anti-Semitism, attack on a synagogue is despicable, but suddenly this becomes a national priority. An attack on a mosque, which is equally despicable, is something which just goes through to the keeper.
And it's approximately 4:21, and you are listening to an interview with David Glantz from the Refugee Action Collective. So, David, we're nearing the end of the interview, but I really appreciate how you explained all the interconnectedness, intersectionality, if you like, between the Nazis and the government, because they're one of the same.
Well, I don't think we have a Nazi government.
No, no, but what I'm trying to say is the rhetoric and the racism,
they feed off each other. The government sets the agenda because the government is way more important than the National Socialist Network. When the government and the opposition, you think of somebody like Andrew Hastie, who is clearly lining up to make a run to become leader of the Liberal Party. His shtick at the moment is all about essentially Australian culture, which is code for white Australia. So this is a man who is, until very recently, was a shadow minister, an opposition spokesperson.
That's right.
Lining up to position himself to become leader of the Liberal Party, and he is pushing a white Australia policy. Labor is carrying through deportations and promising to crack down on migration.
But it's simpler, David. It's if you really look at it, it's similar.
It fertilizes the ground
yes.
for the National Socialist Network.
Precisely.
Come in and go, these guys say there's a problem with migrants. Let us handle it because we're the professionals. Come and join us and we'll really deal with the migrants. So it opens up a whole sphere like that. I've just been reading an article. I won't go through all the detail. It's far too much here. But it goes through, in Europe, all the countries where the far right has now grown to be a quarter or a third of the votes, places like France and Germany and Austria and so on, in every single case, the mainstream parties started the anti-migrant, anti-refugee language long before the far right became big. So it's always the respectable racists at the top of society open the door for the folks at the bottom of society who actually want to physically deal with migrants and refugees, the kind of people who want to beat people up in the street and worse.
So we have to stop the far right increasing their influencing and stop them from fanning the flames of bigotry. David, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Are you able to just, if you don't mind, plug the forum again?
Yeah, absolutely. This is about the use of Nauru as a dumping ground It's next Monday, the 17th of November. It's at the Kathleen Sign Library in Faraday Street, Carlton, at 6:30 p.m. And people can look up Refugee Action Collective on Facebook and find the event with the details. And we would love to see you there, because this is the racism that's coming from the top. Yes, we need to stand against the far right. We need to mobilise. We need to demonstrate. We need to outnumber them. We need to shout them down. But if we don't deal with government racism, the problem will just keep on occurring again and again.
Thank you so much, David, and keep up the good work. Thanks a lot.
Okay. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And you just heard an extended interview with David Glantz from the Refugee Action Collective, speaking about the far right, the rising of the far right politics, but also looking at the intersectionality between what the government is doing and what the Nazis are doing. And it is very, very similar.
Fire. Hi, this is Cheryl Lee Hood. You're invited to the 2025 Beyond the Bars CD launch on Thursday, the 20th of November at the Deering Centre next to Collingwood Town Hall. Put it in your diaries. I'll be there as MC for an evening of talks and music, including a panel discussion with some of our deadly broadcasters and music with Mr. Bar Willoughby. Thursday, the 20th of November, the Deering Centre, next to Collingwood Town Hall, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Free CDs, snacks and drinks provided. All welcome. See you there. Brrr.
It's the sale of the century, brought to you by The Sporting Record. It was a great success last year, so we're doing it again. We're bringing all the usual stuff, records, bric-a-brac, 3CR merch, plus we're going to try some new categories, plants, Christmas stuff and vintage sporting apparel.
The 3CR garage sale, in the 3CR car park at the rear of 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy. Part of the official garage sale trail. Sunday the 16th of November, 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. See you there.
I am not an injured woman, and narana maragayo. Wain duwalinya garo mipar mungin moro.
Just heard a song called Battle by Gurumul, and it's approximately 4:36, and we're going to be speaking with Senator Lydia Thorpe, who is who's going to speak to us about some really important topics. Hi, Lydia, welcome.
Hey, Marissa. Sorry I'm late.
Thanks no, that's okay. Are you okay?
I'm good. I was just talking to the Minister for Environment.
Oh,
about
my goodness.
About informed consent.
Informed consent, huh? Oh, well, you know, with all this climate change and rainforests and everything, it's pretty horrible, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, we're not going to solve any of the colonial damage in this country or anywhere else around the world without First Peoples knowledge. And that must be first and foremost.
Absolutely, because when the land is sick, we're sick. This is what happens.
Right. That's right.
So I'm wondering, I invited you to come on. I'm actually getting over bronchitis at the moment, but I invited you to come on because I wanted to see if you'd talk about just the treaty thing, because I'm not convinced. Don't get me wrong. There's been some wonderful work that's happened, but I've got a few concerns, and I just wanted to talk to you about that and also maybe discuss some of the problems with Camp Sovereignty, what happened there, and why it's not a hate crime.
Sure, sis. Well, I hear you on your concerns and hesitation on what they're calling a treaty in what is now called Victoria. There are some good things, as you say, that have come out of that. I think for our people to be decision makers on a number of government programs or policy areas that affect us, I think that's a good move. That it's our people that make the decision on, say, who gets registered Aboriginal Party status, which only the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs ultimately had decision-making powers for. I think for our people to make that decision and not exclude people the way that whole legislation has really not done the work it's meant to have done. I think, you know, they've got 11 registered Aboriginal parties in 20 years of the cultural heritage legislation, and we've got over 40 nations that should be sitting around that table making decisions for their own country and their own people, whereas, you know, it's not even half the number. So this is an administrative agreement, basically, with government. It's very, you know, it doesn't include land back, doesn't include the end of the destruction of our land and our water, doesn't stop our people from being locked up at the rate that they're being locked up, or our children being taken away at the rate that they are. So I would have, you know, it's not the treaty that our old people have been fighting for and marching in the streets. I don't think that they were marching in the streets for some of the things that this treaty has come up with. So there's a long way to go, and, you know, it's bound by legislation in the parliament, which ultimately means that this we're still being dictated to by a piece of legislation that doesn't acknowledge that we are sovereign, never has, and we're still bound by the confines of the piece of legislation. So we might get some name changes of places, which is symbolic, nice to have. We might get some school zones changed, which is nice to have, and some education, truth-telling in the education curriculum, which is great. It's great. But the boot's still on our neck, and they're locking our women up more than they ever have before. So, yeah, I'm sceptical, but, you know, at the same time, I've never sat on the fence before, but I feel like I'm kind of sitting on the fence a little, because there's a lot of good people involved in this process.
No, there is, absolutely.
And they're taking it personal, any digs that do happen. And we've got to try and keep some harmony amongst our communities and continue to make it better and fight for better.
I mean, this show is very much always going back to colonisation. The Doin' Time show is here to build the movement to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody. And this is something that I have always fought for, not just on this show, but also out on the streets. And I suppose I wonder if I'm hoping that one day the treaty can really have a look at that.
Well, they could, from the goodness of their heart, raise the age of legal responsibility to 14 and stop locking up 10-year-old children, our babies. 14 is, you know, I mean, it should be 16. In fact, it should be 18. When you go to our brothers and sisters, Aotearoa, it's 18. They were absolutely gobsmacked when I told them, no, it's 10 where I come from. They cannot believe, they can't fathom that this country locks up our babies. So, you know, treaty, I would have liked for them to raise the age of legal responsibility. I would have liked them to remove hanging points in the cells. I would have liked for some land back for our people to enjoy, and I know that that's responsibility of the traditional owners when they get the chance. But what the state treaty could have done is to call for a moratorium on all Crown land sales, because Crown land is treaty land. And the Premier, first, it was Andrews who did an absolute mass sale of Crown land. Now we're seeing Jacinta do the same thing, sell enough Crown land. Look at all the towers. That's Crown land.
Yeah.
We could be looking after those towers and having the rent paid to our people whose land it's on.
Yeah, that's right. And those towers, they've made a big mess of those towers and all the people that live there. Where are they going to go now?
Well, they'll move them out to places like Doreen and, an hour
God.
Out of the city. And I've seen that. I've as part of trying to save the Northcote estate and had to deal with non-Aboriginal elders, begging to stay because they didn't want to be shipped out to places like Doreen because of their medical, their doctors and just the community that looked after them. That's what happens. It's basically just displacement of poor people to make way for people that have got money for, flash apartments in the city.
In some ways, 1788 all over again, and it's not just about that, but about a lot of things that nothing has changed in some ways.
No, it's just more sophisticated, unfortunately, and that's the ongoing genocide of our people without our land. Who are we as a people? How do we maintain our connection and our traditions if we don't have our own land to do that? And all of the things that come with that, the water and our totems.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's ongoing, but we must continue to resist. And I think there's, more good people around that want to stand with us and maintain that resistance, and that's what we've got to keep doing.
We really need to, and it's so important. Just a quick update on what's happening with Camp Sovereignty, and do you think that there should be an investigation into what happened there?
Absolutely. I've called for that. I think that the Victoria Police need to be investigated into as to why they allowed those racist neo-Nazis to walk through the city, armed and dangerous, to then come to Camp Sovereignty and commit the terrible violence that they did. that, you know, if it was a bunch of blackfellas, then the cops would have been all over that. But unfortunately, you know, we're just not seen in the same realm as white people in this country, and cops do not care about black people or people of colour. We are the bottom rung, and they need to be held accountable. Vic Pohl and the Commissioner of Police needs to come out and explain why the police basically assisted that neo-Nazi group to get to Camp Sovereignty, assisted by not intervening, not stopping them. They had full rein on whatever they wanted to do, and that's not okay. And it needs to be seen as a hate crime at the federal level because it constitutes a hate crime. It's against a group of people, and that group of people was our people. It was a sacred site. If it were a mosque or a synagogue, it would be seen as a hate crime. Why isn't ours, the assault on our sacred place, not seen as the same? We have over 400,000 signatures on a petition that went around the world calling for the cops or the government to take it seriously and call it for what it is, a hate crime. But still the government refuses to acknowledge that it is. They're saying that it doesn't meet all of the criteria. But we've had a number of people look at this, and we're saying, well, show us where it doesn't meet the criteria, because
that is
we've
crazy.
Got evidence otherwise. Yeah.
It doesn't meet the criteria when there are all these Nazis there bashing people.
Yep. Yep.
On a sacred site. On a sacred site.
That's right. And it was very well planned and sophisticated. It was premeditated. They put the young Nazis up front who don't have a criminal record. They made sure that they were the ones that caused the harm and the violence. It was all very well planned and executed. So it meets more than the crimes committed against the synagogues and the mosques. When you look at those crimes, hate crimes, no one was hurt in those hate crimes.
Yeah. Lydia, thank you so much for coming onto the program and making time, because it's always really important to have First Nations communities and lived experience on the show.
My pleasure, Marissa, and you keep fighting this, and thank you for your program.
Awesome. Have a great night and take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Senator Lydia Thorpe, who was speaking about treaty and about what needs to be done with treaty. At the same time, recognising that there does need to be harmony amongst First Nations communities. And we spoke about deaths in custody, and she also spoke about Camp Sovereignty and about the fact that there needs to be an investigation.
So it's up to us, the people. We need a treaty in this country. We need the end to the war in this country. And the only way we can do that is through a peace treaty. Not the one you see in Victoria, not the one you see in Queensland, not the one you see in the Northern Territory, because they talk treaty and still lock our people up. They still kill our people. They still desecrate our land and our water. A treaty means peace. A treaty means equality. And a treaty means justice. Thank you.
You're listening to Radical Radio on 3CR, 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital, and podcasting and streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
And in case you've just tuned in, this is the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. It's approximately 4:53, and I just wanted to read out a very quick media release from the Human Rights Law Centre, and it's for immediate release Monday the 10th of November 2025. Albanese government's mass deportations to Nauru, marred by reports of corruption. The Human Rights Law Centre is commenting on reports of entrenched corruption in Australia's offshore detention regime on Nauru amidst the Albanese government's plans to deport people to their potential deaths in Nauru. This comes after 60 Minutes aired allegations from whistleblowers that the Albanese government granted a taxpayer-funded government contract to a bikie gang to provide security on Nauru to the migrants and refugees it plans to deport from Nauru. Comment attributable to Samati Verma, legal director at the Human Rights Law Centre. For two decades, Australia's policy of warehousing migrants and refugees in Nauru has been built on selling lies to the public about who is running the detention camps, how much money is changing hands, and what happens to people once we send them to Nauru. The only beneficiaries have been companies that profit from locking people up and governments desperate to secure another term, no matter what the cost in dollars or in human lives. When Labor was in opposition, it watched what was unfolding on Nauru and Manus Island and said never again. And yet here we are again. Not only does the policy of offshore warehousing continue, it is being expanded with a multi-billion dollar deal to deport a tiny group of people who have already spent years locked up in immigration detention. Just weeks ago, the Albanese government changed the law so that it could deport people to Nauru without notice and without considering what would happen to them once they got there. Over the past few weeks, lawyers across the country have received panicked calls from people who have been snatched from their homes in the middle of the night and told they are being sent to Nauru on a 30-year visa they didn't apply for. In each case, deportation to Nauru will be a life sentence. It will mean that people are left without the health care they need to stay alive and permanently separated from their families. None of this has anything to do with community safety and everything to do with our government's desperate posturing at home and in the Pacific. In September, Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke signed a $40 million deal to deport people to Nauru after changing the law so that the Australian government has no obligation to give notice to or hear from the people it intends to deport. The Australian government will not have to consider the consequences people would face, such as whether a person might die without proper medical care, be permanently separated from their families, or face persecution in Nauru. So I just wanted to read that out because I'll be doing an interview pretty soon about that. And now it's goodbye from Marissa. And thank you to our guests for coming onto the show. Stay tuned every Monday from 4 to 5 for the Do and Time show. And thanks so much. Take care of each other. Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.